everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Stories Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and look for the traces of the one reality that lies below the surface.
Mm-hmm. Today is episode 61, and we're going to talk about The Demolished Man by Alfred Bester.
A classic.
A classic, yes. From 1953, the first winner of the Hugo Award.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's the very first one.
And that's so fitting, I think.
I think so, too. Yeah, Alfred Bester, he wrote not very much, but his two books, this one and The Stars, My Destination, are constant picks for, you know, top science fiction novels. And this one is an excellent, excellent book.
Oh, yeah.
I really enjoyed it. It's a murder mystery. But, you know, I was disappointed in not finding a heck of a lot of, you know, themes of the type that we usually talk about in this show. And I'm not sure why I picked it, to be honest with you, other than I was really craving science fiction.
Yes, that's pretty clear between iRobot last time.
Yeah, and I was just like, yeah, I want to read some hard science fiction. But the hard science fiction is funny because, I mean, this one's all about ESP and things. Which,
is it really hard science fiction?
No, that's what I was going to say. I think that back then maybe it was considered that, you know, John Campbell, who was a big editor at the time, you know, was always wanting science in his stories and stuff, but he loved the ESP too. And, you know, that's interesting. Even in Foundation, you know, remember Isaac Asimov's Foundation, there's some of this that goes on.
Man, I haven't read that series for a long time.
Yeah, it's been forever, but...
don't take that as a hint. That's I'm fine with that.
Next week, no.
No, it's too long.
We did some Asimov last week, or 2 weeks ago.
We need to actually read some, but that's a different podcast.
Yeah, maybe sometime. Yeah, it would be interesting to try and think of an Asimov novel that would be fun to talk about on this. Interesting.
Caves of Steel. I'm all over that.
Oh yeah, Caves of Steel would be good.
Yeah, because it's a mystery, too, because I love mysteries. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this one, Wikipedia called this a inverted detective story, which I had to look up because I thought that was an interesting term that I've never heard before.
Where you know the answer and you watch them try to prove it, you
exactly,
mean?
Yeah. It says, an inverted detective story is a murder mystery fiction structure in which the commission of the crime is shown or described at the beginning, usually including the identity of the perpetrator. And then it lists a few, like Dial M for Murder.
Oh, yes.
And
that's a great
some
one.
Plays and stuff. So, yeah, I just hadn't heard that term before.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, no, I hadn't either, but that makes sense. And it's funny because when I was reading this, I read this many times, evidently, from how quickly things would come to mind for me. I would like to feel like I was really smart, but I know it's because I read this a lot when I was in high school. My parents loved Alfred Bester. And when one of his rare books would show up, they'd pick it up at the supermarket and bring it home. And we would all read it. But what I was thinking is I'd forgotten how much of a... It's not really a murder mystery to me as it is a struggle of will between two people. Once you get into the murder part where you've got Ben Reich who commits the murder, since you start off seeing him ready to commit it, he just can't wait for that negative answer to his contracts because he's like, yes, I can kill the guy now. Yeah,
he is pretty intense.
Yeah,
he reacts to things very strongly.
This whole book is intense, and I had forgotten that that's kind of Alfred Bester's style. He's very intense. He's very... I like to call it muscular. It's very macho, like, bam, bam. This is happening now. That's happening now. This is here we go here and here we go there. And it's very, it drags you through the story really fast. And I like that about it. I like that telling of the mystery so that once the detective comes in and the two people actually sit down at one point because he's like, I read your mind. I wasn't allowed to, so it's not admissible as evidence, but I know you did it. And he's like, I thought you would, because it's what I would have done. And so they sit down and have this little conversation about, come on, just give yourself up. I'm tempted. No. Fight to the death? All right. Shake on it and go on.
Are we enemies now? Yes, we're enemies now.
Yeah, so. but they really like each other and respect each other, although in an adversarial kind of way. And so then watching what happens after that, it just gets in his style faster and faster and faster, and you can hardly keep up. Yeah. So now it's not a perfect book to me, but.
Yeah, sure. And Ben Reich, he's got some similarities to that character from The Star's My Destination, too.
Yes.
I think, you know, because the character in The Star's My Destination was, you know, revenge. That was his whole thing. It was revenge because he was left for dead in space.
Right.
Yeah. And then he was just so, I mean, it just felt really similar to me, that the intensity, it was almost, you know, his emotional reaction would just be like over the top with almost everything that happened. He'd be like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, The Star's My Destination, you and I talked about with Jesse over on SFF Audio before this podcast even existed. And that one spurred a lot of thought for us, which I think spawned this podcast. So, you know, that was one of the things anyway.
I recommend that episode. Well, I recommend SFF Audio anyway.
Oh yeah. Sure enough. Me too.
But, that one was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. And so the world in The Demolished Man it's an interesting place. I don't know that I'd want to live there, but it's an interesting place. The, you know, there's espers, they call them espers, they're telepaths. This is set in the future, you know, not too far out. And there are three different levels of espers. The class three can detect just, you know, what somebody's thinking at the time. And then class two can dig more deeply. And then you have class one, which are usually very highly paid operatives of companies or governments. I think, you know, companies is mostly what they talked about in this one. One of the first scenes in the book is Ben Reich, who is really super rich. He has a nightmare about this man with no face.
That's right.
And he gets up and he's really agitated. He puts on his robe and he walks down the hall and he opens the door and there's a psychologist sitting there waiting for him.
Yes.
And so he lays down on the couch and starts to talk about his problems and his nightmares. And the idea was that this psychologist was super highly paid, on call 24/7. And because this psychologist was a class one, he knew that Ben Reich was having a nightmare, and he knew that he was going to want to come in, so he got ready for him.
Right, but he didn't hire a class one. He hired a class two.
Oh, okay.
And he got, didn't he? Because he got mad at him and said, why don't you know this? And he goes, why don't you hire a class one?
Oh, yeah.
I can't do that. You're deliberately not wanting to find out.
Right.
And then he goes into one of his famous rages. It kicks him out. Yeah. I don't want to answer that question right now. Let's leave.
Yeah.
In which we all understand. There are all things that happen that we don't want to know about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the whole point of Ben Reich's character. He thinks he's in command. He thinks he's running the show. And yet he's driven by these horrible nightmares that he can't escape. And he's doing a lot of things where you look at them and think, is that really the best way to handle this situation? But no one can sway him. He's very determined.
Yeah, right.
But it also is very interwoven with psychological theory, would you say? Or the whole book has got this, I'm thinking, because I think I read something that said it was Freudian. I don't know. But there's this whole psychological aspect of the book also. And I believe that was a big part of The Star's My Destination, too. And so clearly, Alfred Bester is fascinated by what drives us besides what we know. You know, what's below the surface.
Yeah, yeah.
And motivations. The book establishes, that early on where they're doing word association to try to see who's the man with no face. Well, you must know. You keep dreaming. Let's talk about this. And some of these things where he's kind of establishing how people are looking at what they think, you know, where he's saying, oh, what, that slip of the mind meant to think this, you know, that wasn't a slip. It was a significant correction. I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Stop it. That part to me was annoying.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember minding it when I was younger, but I kept looking at it going, to me, it was a flaw in the whole thing. Although I don't know how he could have done it differently. You'd have had to restructure it. Because he was so interested in that element that it was a key component.
Yeah, and it was a key component to the resolution of it all, too.
And he used it to slip in clues that I thought were just bogus. I'm just going to say.
Yep.
Oh, he couldn't kill so-and-so because somewhere deep down in his DNA, he knew that they were related somehow. And you're just like, oh, no, whoa, hold on. Stop it. I'm not accepting this.
Oh,
I mean,
man.
I have to, but it's weak. Sorry, Alfred. Yeah. I know you're rolling in your grave, but that's just how it's going to go here.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
But despite that, it was still a compelling mystery.
Yeah, and it was. So he decides, Ben Reich decides to murder a rival company, mm-hmm. the head of a rival company.
Right.
And he makes that final decision because he sends this other company a offer for merger, and he receives an answer back, and he, you know, it's in code, and he reads it as, you know, hey, that's a rejection of this merger. So that throws him over the completely over the top.
That's He's it. Like, well, I've I'm got no murder choice this now guy but now. To kill you.
I'm going to kill this guy now.
And talk about an impossible task, because everyone mm-hmm. who's wealthy at all has these peepers, as they call mm-hmm. them,
yeah.
because they could peep into your mind. So not only do you have to plan a murder, which is unheard of because of these high level peepers that will find people with those tendencies and help correct their thinking.
Yeah, I think it said it's been 70 years since there was a murder.
Yeah, that, and you've got to hide what you did, hide what you're planning. I mean, it's just, yeah. And then there's the physical clues with the part that we're used to.
Right, right. Yeah, so that made it really interesting. You know, so mm-hmm. he goes to a party, and this is one of the neatest things about this book, I think, is he goes to a party where this person is supposed to be located.
Right.
And everybody's, you know, there's wordplay, there's you know, the structure of the, you know, I have no idea how they do this in audio, if they ever did. I don't even know if an audiobook exists. But they're, you know, it almost like, I think you'd have to do like an audio drama somehow and kind of have all this going on at the same time. But I'm looking at, yeah, I don't know if it'd work. But the words are patterned on the page, you know, with people's thoughts, they can create images and things. One of the games, they were playing a game. Somebody would create an image with words.
That's a different party, but yeah.
Oh, is it? Yeah, okay.
That's so, the Esper party that Lincoln Powell, the detective, is having.
Ah, that's right, okay.
Because remember, and I don't know how they do this, I guess they could, but when Mary comes in to help him get ready for the party, and he says, blessings, and it's in a Gothic script, so
right,
you
right.
get that playful, formal, kind of like Dickensian image that he's sending to her.
Mm-hmm.
How could you do that in audio?
No, I don't know how you could.
I guess you could, but then he's, you know, she says, I'm so sick of always having the same imprint, sensory impact every time, snow / mint / tulips / taffeta.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know? That, you know, he would think that, you know, is that image forming in his mind somehow,
mm-hmm.
that he's seeing this word in this Gothic script? Or is it a sound or something, you know?
Oh, I figured he was just sending that mentally.
Yeah.
Because anything in italics is they're thinking to each other.
Exactly. So I'm just wondering, I don't know, maybe a person on audio could create a sound or something for that.
Did you read this in on your Kindle?
No, I read this in print. I have
okay,
the,
because
I got
there's
one of
this
the,
thing at the party where they're making patterns, and at one point they make this thing that's so chaotic they all just stop laughing, and you trying to read it are almost doing the same thing. It was a really neat concept that I've never thought of before. How would you play smart people having fun and sending their thoughts back and forth and keeping track of everyone else's thoughts, because then later they complain about it and they go, oh, all right. And so they make this super rigid structure that's easy to read, and then they all just start laughing because somebody can't finish the pattern, and which sets it up for when he goes to a, I guess, Esper headquarters there. And so there's, he's going by the rooms where all the third levels are, and they're weaving basket patterns, they say. And you can just imagine what they're doing and how they are learning to control their thoughts and interact with others. It was, I have to say, for the flaws of the psychological part to me, it was completely offset by this whole concept of how do these Espers interact. He was so creative with that, and how they fit into society, their moral code that their guild has so that they're not allowed to take advantage of it or abuse other people with it. But this whole idea of how they train them was really interesting, I thought.
Yeah, I did too. I did too. Yeah, a quick...
Sorry, I broke into your...
No, that's fine. Just a quick side note.
Yeah.
There's a little part here where he says, a traffic officer, now in plain clothes, was going to come through on his big chance with a suave approach. To the manager and staff of the Century Audiobook Store, he drawled. I thought that was kind of cool.
That is neat.
1953, he's predicting audiobook stores.
I didn't catch that. That's good.
Yeah, that's that was pretty cool. But yeah, that's just a side thing. But the I found the same thing fascinating. That's what I think makes the book interesting, and I think why people like it is just this whole society of Espers, you know.
Well, and also he takes you into other levels of society through this very wealthy fellow who you see those people. And they're kind of what you expect by now, although at the time I'm sure it was outrageous to think of that hostess who would just have her physique changed through whatever kind of physical surgery that she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But, and because, of course, they could do it at a snap of the fingers without any problem. But then also, because he's trying to set up the murder, he is going to the seamy underbelly. And the exploration of that, however briefly, when they're looking for a runaway witness and when the person is trying to get set up for these underworld figures to help him, it's fascinating. It's like reading Blade Runner or something.
Yeah, exactly.
The image is, it's very seamy.
Yeah, it is. I kept thinking, you know, wow, this might make a decent movie. Mm-hmm. If they could figure out how to match the text, you know, with this fascinating telepathy and how they interact and everything that you just described, if they could figure out how to translate that onto a screen.
But I think they could now.
I think that they could too, yeah.
Have you seen the new Sherlock series?
I've seen just an episode or two.
Okay, but think of how they would show Sherlock looking at a body, and they'd show all the things that he noted on the body by doing little graphics and text.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing when he's calling, somebody's calling all the cell phones of all the reporters, and it's suddenly showing all the texts receiving, that kind of thing. I think you could now do it in a way you couldn't before.
Yeah, that would be actually really cool.
I'm excited. Somebody make this into a movie.
Christopher Nolan.
Oh, yeah.
That would actually fit, wouldn't it?
Don't spend time on Superman. We've seen that enough.
We've seen Superman.
Yes. Yeah, there's not that much to see in Superman. I'm just going to say it. I'm going to put it out there, everybody. Send your hate mail to Juliet.
Yeah, that's a tough one, isn't it? I don't understand that one. It's just, they totally changed the trailer, and I saw a new trailer, and it looks more interesting now.
Oh, good.
But it's still not, it's going to be what it is. I don't know how, you know. Anyway, I'm with you on that. I just don't understand why they thought that would be a good idea.
Yeah, and it's all dark looking because they put, I don't know, did they put a dark filter on it?
They must have been like a gray where you can see the reds really well.
Right?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Who knows?
Anyway, that's away from the book. But
Superman and the Demolished Man. Superman would probably just beat him up.
Right. So the rest of the book is the guy trying to set up the murder, which was fascinating in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lincoln
Powell. Yeah, and then that all happens really fast. It's only maybe the first third of the book. It's all over with. And then, you know, the incident occurs, and then this guy Powell shows up, who's now going to try and solve this crime.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the book is the struggle between Powell and Reich.
Yes, and it had an interesting element because, as happens with an interestingly written murder, there's something unexpected that happens that Reich is like, I didn't know about this, and so I couldn't have prepared for it. Damn! So there's a witness who gets away.
Mm-hmm.
And she's traumatized, and so no one knows where they can find her. So both people, at the same time as they're fighting this battle of trying to find it out, trying to conceal it, are desperately have everybody they can muster looking for this witness.
Yep.
Because, and they're offering higher and higher rewards. Everything's punctuated by find that girl, because she's the one who's the key to everything. And then when they do find her, since we're assuming everybody's read the book, if they've hung on this long, then she's been traumatized. So it's Bester's chance to go, goody, let's do some more psychological stuff. Let's take her down to a baby and build her back up to a young lady in 2 to 3 weeks. Which actually, I found that actually kind of interesting, watching her personality change. Yeah. Although the whole thing about, you're in love with her, she's in love with you because she thinks you're her father now. And I'm like, no, stop it. Really?
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, we haven't talked about what demolished means.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you don't know until the end of the book, really.
Right, right.
That's the threat. If
it's
you're
the
caught,
threat, yeah.
You'll be demolished.
Exactly.
With a capital D.
Yeah, so they do mention it early on. You know, the police are saying, well, we're going to, whoever did this is going to be demolished, et cetera. But, so that's basically an erasing of memories and things. Just taking you down, you know, the reason I thought of it is because you said they took her down to a baby and built her up.
Mm-hmm.
That's what demolished is. You're gonna basically be erased and rebuilt, you know, by society. And I guess they re-educate you and put you in somewhere. And that word re-education, you know, it's chilling for everybody.
Right. Well, and the idea of, it's funny because you find out what it is at the end and you think, well, why would Ben Reich resist that so much? Because he'd be happier. He'd have no more dreams of the man with no face and all this. But of course, it's destroying your basic personality, who you are right now. So you can't see past what the bad is to what the good could be, which is the overall interesting theme, I guess, for us as Catholics. Now that I think about it, we cling to all these things that we love so much that are so bad for us sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's almost like sometimes God is, well, because he's a gentleman, he doesn't force you into stuff. He says, here's the deal. You give this up, your life is going to be so much better. And you're just like, well, I'm not sure I believe that. I think I'm going to cling to this dear little sin that's, I love it so much. And then if you finally can work your way past it, you go, wow, following that rule that seemed so unnecessary but got me away from this problem, I'm free. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, in a sense, this whole, now, wow, I never thought of this, but this
whole book
is kind of like,
well, clearly I chose this novel for adults.
You are wise on a level that neither of us knew, sir. I take my hat off to you, and I tip it to Alfred Bester, who clearly knew that we should have chosen the book. And
well, that's a fascinating perspective. That's interesting.
Yeah,
because you know we the rules as freeing things are, you know, something that a lot of people don't get, and I have found that to be true. You know, in Catholicism, you know, clearly there are rules, but, you know, and sometimes it's difficult, you know, if you get mired with, you know, the whys and the hows and everything, when you just need to look at what the purpose could be.
Also though, I think about, I think about the fact that, and I'm just going to huge giveaway, everyone. The code is misread by Ben Reich deliberately. He doesn't go back and check what that code is, because the code was not, I reject your offer. The code was, I accept your offer. he was so blinded by his own psychological problems and his own thoughts and his own desires that he saw, in essence, what he wanted to see. It was his excuse to plan this murder and kill this person. And how many times do we lie to ourselves without stopping to really kind of listen to somebody else's advice or whatever, or get someone else's counsel? You know, he only hires the level two person instead of the level one who could really help him.
Yeah.
How much will we let ourselves be assisted? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
I never thought of wow, this book suddenly took on a whole new... I mean, that's not why he wrote it, I feel sure, but it's kind of an interesting focus, especially, excuse me again, when you look at the end of the book, which is a total celebration of the essential goodness of man and joy.
Yeah, and that was a striking thing that, you mentioned a couple days ago that I thought was, you know, well, that's absolutely so. It is surprising, you know, to have all this psychology stuff and then have it end up to be kind of affirming is kind of surprising.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the very last line in the novel, which doesn't give anything away, it says, "There has been joy, there will be joy again." In fact, this whole last paragraph is awesome.
Yeah, why don't you read it?
Okay. "In the endless universe, there has been nothing new. Nothing different. What has appeared exceptional to the minute mind of man has been inevitable to the infinite eye of God. This strange second in a life, that unusual event, those remarkable coincidences of environment, opportunity, and encounter, all of them have been reproduced over and over on the planet of a sun whose galaxy revolves once in 200 million years and has revolved 9 times already. There has been joy. There will be joy again."
Man.
Yeah.
Who would expect that in this book?
I don't know. It doesn't seem to fit in there. But
no,
there
except
it is.
That yeah. Right before that, Lincoln Powell says, "Listen, normals, you must learn what it is. You must learn how it is. You must tear the barriers down. You must tear the veils away. You see that we see the truth you cannot see. That there is nothing in man but love and faith, courage and kindness, generosity and sacrifice. All else is only the barrier of your blindness. One day we'll all be mind to mind and heart to heart."
Hmm.
Because the goal is that they of the guild overall is that they can teach this Esper quality to everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
And the idea is once you can do that, then you can, of course, know each other better and you don't have all the problems. So... But it's such an affirming thing. And then when I think about it in context of what we were just talking about in terms of how do we fight ourselves even in regular life, even if you're not religious, look at the things we do that we constantly will struggle with, sometimes knowing that we'll be better off, but we just can't. We're weak, you know, can't make ourselves do what we want to do sometimes.
Right, right. Yeah, the difference between who you want to be and who you are.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Even if you know how to get there, sometimes you just don't.
Yeah, I don't even want to get all psychological on you, but it's almost like Lincoln Powell and Ben Reich are two halves of the same person.
That was
episode, take all of it back.
Episode 37 of the original Star Trek series. No.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Remember that one where there was half black, half white guys?
That's what I was just thinking.
Yeah, I can't
but
remember.
We were both half black and half white. But he's black on the right side. I'm black on the left side. And I was like, oh, blow my mind, man.
Kaboosh.
Oh, man.
Oh, funny.
The Riddler.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Just to really blend things further, which I believe Alfred Bester would also approve of. Let's mash it up, folks.
Yep. Oh,
yeah, but funny. I like this book much better than, what is it, The Star is My Destination.
Oh, did you?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, yeah. I think The Star is My Destination. I think I'd have to read that again, but my impression is that I like that one better. And I can't put my fingers on why. It's just, I don't know. Like I said, I'm going to have to read it again because The Star's My Destination, for some reason, is kind of it's too vague in my memory. I can't remember exactly.
It's nebulous, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's it's just one of those books, you know, I've read it twice now, and why would it still be nebulous? It's like, I don't know, it makes you think these thoughts or something, but I don't know, this one feels more concrete.
Yes, maybe mm-hmm. that's why I like it, because I really do love the duel of the two men, mm-hmm. one trying to uncover the clues that he needs, because this is the other thing that's great. They have to feed all the evidence into a computer, and whatever the computer decides, well, this won't hold up in trial, so nope, you can't. So they go out and get more evidence. So that's, I thought, an interesting twist that everybody would trust the computer with evaluating the evidence because it's so black and white.
Wow, yeah.
And it's not moved by any of the emotions that the people have. But I want everyone to know this. I want it to be so. Yeah. And this duel between them was, for me, the most satisfying part of a book. It's very... You're caught up in the contest because the way he writes it is very urgent and extreme and very yeah. focused.
Yeah. It would make a good movie. I wonder why it hasn't happened.
Yeah, I don't know. It would be.
I imagine that all that Esper stuff is probably what has stopped him. But mm-hmm. now may be the time.
Yes. Yeah. Somebody take this idea, the motion graphics. Come on, you could do it. You could do it. But it does come down to good old-fashioned police work in a way, because the slip that Reich makes is one when he's giving his evidence.
Yeah. Would you call this a police procedural?
I suppose you would.
I guess you could.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because that's what they're doing. They're trying to collect physical evidence, not anything mental, because that's not acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting thought, too. You know, if you have all these espers around, why not have a judge that's a one? You know, and then you have two parties come up and then have this one make the decision.
Well, because everybody's not espers, I guess.
Yeah, and then I guess you've got, what, a huge opportunity for corruption there.
Mm-hmm. As we saw, mm-hmm. this rich man has corrupted not one, but two people. Right. And that second one, I'm like... Really? You saw what happened to Jerry Church, didn't you? And you're still going to do this? Again, I know what's really true and what's going to happen and what's likely, but I still choose this because I want it. I want that shiny thing over there.
Yeah, that's another interesting aspect of this is intent. You know, mm-hmm. if everybody can understand everyone else's intent, mm-hmm. I mean, that's an interesting concept. You know, that's what God is supposed to know of us. And what if we all knew that all the time? Would it be better or would it be worse? I'm not sure.
Wow, you know, it seems like it would be better.
Yeah, most of us have good intentions, don't we?
I think so. And the problem is, how do you communicate those to people always?
Right, right.
But we like to judge other people based on their intention. We'd based want on, other people yeah, based to judge us based on what we do.
Yeah, based on what we perceive as their intention.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's the point that Bester was making at the very end. He's like, you know, when we're all espers, when we can all be mind to mind, we can see how good people are at the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's saying that, you know, we're basically good, which is, you know, that's great.
Yes, and that's exactly the Catholic way of thinking, that mm-hmm. when God made the world, he makes something and it is good, you know, on the first day, it's good. He looked around and mm-hmm. then the logical conclusion, he made man is good also. Not every religion believes that,
mm-hmm.
including a lot of them that broke off from the Reformation, unfortunately, because I know, which one was it? Who was it? Calvin? Who described man basically as a dung heap covered by snow. So, you know, and that's a horrible thing to have to think about yourself and fight against,
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, we're all evil underneath, or we're all bad and it's hard to redeem you. You need someone to redeem you because we're awful. And I liked the way Peter Kreeft, well, that's not how you say it, Kreeft, Kreeft, describes it as we're all actually like a masterpiece, but we've got scratches on us. You know, and those need to be fixed. yeah. so we can be what we were meant to be.
Right. We're a piece of paper with that we've messed up, and we ask for another piece of paper.
Right.
Yeah. Could I please have another one? Here you like, go. Do better this time.
Well, here's Michelangelo's David, and somebody chipped the toe off or whatever, and so now can we fix that? Yeah.
Right, right.
And that's essentially what he's saying at the end. It was pretty amazing. I didn't remember that at all.
Yeah. Yeah, and I didn't either. I was surprised by it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I really liked that last paragraph. That was something. Yeah. So. Well, so, good. So
good
it was
choice.
Fun. It's fun. It's a fun book. It's, you know, nice summer read.
Intense, but nice.
Yeah, I liked it. That's, yeah. Isn't that what you'd call a summer read? I would. This is my summer, I guess.
Yeah, well, no, it's like picking up a thriller.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly, it is. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, are you reading anything else?
I am.
Anything else interesting?
My mind is a blank. Although I did just see a movie that's a good summer movie that I enjoyed called Attack the Block.
Attack the Block.
Have you seen that?
I have not even heard of Attack the Block.
Oh, it's really a great premise, which is that aliens land, hostile, like aliens type mm-hmm. things land. But they land near a council block in London, and a council block is like saying the projects here. Mm-hmm. So it's this gang of thugs. And I mean, when I say thugs, I mean, partway into the movie, I was like, oh, we have to follow these people. I hate these people. They're awful. But they're the ones who are the only ones really aware of the alien invasion at first, and they're the ones having to deal with the situation. And so, of course, as it goes on, they encounter other people, they band together, you start to learn who they are. And it's almost, in a sense, like The Demolished Man. And as you find out a little bit more, especially about the main person, you don't find out a lot. It's a monster movie.
Hmm.
Let's be clear about that. But it's really, it was done on a low budget. It's really well done. And it's kind of like the same sort of a feel. Have you seen Pitch Black?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know how it's a good monster movie. It's pretty simple. You've got the main motivation of the main one or two or three characters that you kind of care about. You want to see one of them move along a little more. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to get like super deep. It's no Inception or anything like that. But it's great for what it is.
Hmm.
And it was so, I class that loosely into science fiction and summer because it's a monster movie.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, just I put it on my Netflix queue. It's not streaming, but on DVD.
Okay.
So.
Well, yeah, because I got it from our local place.
That's neat.
But the
we don't have a local place that's as awesome as your local place.
Well.
Which I envision like Warehouse 13. Have you ever seen that show?
I
it must be
not,
like this giant warehouse like that has every movie ever made.
It's almost like that. If I ask them for a movie and they don't have it, I'm stunned. And usually they have everything. The only problem is a lot of them, they'll say, we only have that on VHS. So you have to like climb this tall ladder, or somebody there does, and get it for you from the third shelf up at the top.
Oh, but, amazing.
Yes, well, if and when you come to Dallas, I will mm-hmm. show it to you. It doesn't look like that much, but it's pretty great. You have everything.
How funny. What's it called again?
Premiere Video.
Premiere Video, neat.
In Dallas on Mockingbird Central.
I love it.
Just down from the Burger King and the Mattress Store. Just doesn't sound like a place you'd find all that stuff, but there you go.
Oh, that's neat.
And I understand that Luke Wilson's mother often goes there to rent videos.
Fantastic.
She must live near there, yes.
That's cool.
So what have you been reading or watching? Or
Well, reading, you know, really craving a hard science fiction. I've been for a while, and I'm like, okay, now I'm going to read one. So
okay,
I started 2312 by Kim Stanley Robinson, which is a novel that's it's up for a Hugo, and it
okay.
won the Nebula Award. But it's about, you know, the title's a year, so 2312. So I'm not really sure what it's going to be about yet. But the opening scene is on Mercury, and yeah. there's a city on Mercury that's on these rails that keeps it in the part where the temperature's okay, you know, because mm-hmm. it's really hot on one side and really cold on the other. Right. So they kind of want to keep it in the middle.
They
and while
straddle
it spins, the city just kind of moves with it. And people take to watching the sunrise over Mercury. So okay. when you're on there, I mean, the sun's so close and hot that you can't stay out there once the sun comes up.
Right.
But this character likes to push that time as far as she can.
Oh, no,
so it's like
no,
you see the flames start to, you know, you can see the solar flares and things come up over the horizon. You know, clearly she's in a space suit and everything, so you can, you
but
know.
Still.
But it was awesome. I was like, yes, this is exactly what I wanted. So
I was going to say, what makes it hard science fiction, but I guess I see that now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so far, yeah. We'll see. We'll see. I'm assuming it's hard science fiction because that's what Kim Stanley Robinson writes.
Is it? I've never read anything by, is that a him or her?
It's a him.
Okay.
Yeah, his most famous works are the Mars novels. He wrote Red Mars, I think it's Red, Green, and Blue.
Okay.
And Red Mars is the one that I've read, and it was a really detailed description of our first trip to Mars. And
oh.
Yeah, they sent 100 people.
Okay.
At once, instead of, you know, little ships Three. Or whatever. They sent a colony,
yeah.
basically. What they hoped would be something sustainable. So it was funny. You know, what I remember of that book is these 100 people are selected, they're trained, they're super trained, and then they put them in a ship and they launch it. And the moment that they're launched, they declare independence. They said, yeah, we're not going to be listening to you guys anymore. So
we think we're set. We'll do yeah. what we want. That doesn't sound like a good plan at all.
Yeah, but it was a really good book. Took
oh,
him
really?
I heard an interview of him, and it took him like 9 years to write those three books. Just
okay.
full of incredible detail and
of the science and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I would hate that.
Yeah, I don't know if you'd like it or not. It's not really.
Well, I actually might like it if mm-hmm. there's enough action to counter the incredible detail, which I would be skimming over quite a bit of that. I'm just
yeah.
going to say right now.
Or Tam was, he was like, wow, nothing's happening in this book.
See?
Yeah.
I know I can count on Tam for that kind of thing. See, and now we've mentioned him twice.
Excellent.
Let's
excellent,
make up
excellent.
For other stuff.
And then as far as watching, I went and saw M. Night Shyamalan's new movie.
Did you?
Yes.
What did you think?
You know, I didn't hate it as much as other people did.
Well, that's damning with
it's
faint
like,
crazy
you know,
teeth.
I was describing it to someone else, and I said, you know, his latest couple of movies were that weren't good at all. And he said, yeah. And I said, well, this is better than that. It's called After Earth.
Oh, I've been hearing a lot of people talk about it, but they very rarely mention the director. They're all over how Will Smith is acting.
Well,
and didn't he write the story?
Yeah, he has a story
concept?
Credit on there. Yeah, and okay. I looked at that and it said, you know, story by Will Smith. So I imagine him going to M. Night Shyamalan and saying, hey, I've got this idea. I want to do it with my son. I think it would be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Will Smith is very non-emotional in this book. He's like a Vulcan, I guess. And I mean, he's not an alien in the story at all. He's human, but he's purged himself of all fear. So that just makes him pretty much an ice cube throughout the whole thing.
So, that's really what we love to watch him for, isn't it? The fact that
yeah,
he's not a human
the opposite,
at all.
It's the opposite of what we like from him.
Yeah.
So that must be where the criticism comes from. But the story wasn't bad. You know, it's a slower moving film than a lot of the action stuff, which I usually don't mind. But, yeah, is it magnificent? No, but it's okay. Yeah, I would rent it.
I've heard several people say that it's like watching somebody play a video game because the ship, this is a big shipwreck. This isn't mm-hmm. a secret, right? There's
no.
a big shipwreck mm-hmm. and part of the ship is over here, part of the ship is over there, and the kid is the only one who evidently thought to put a seatbelt on. So he's uninjured
yeah, he
and alive,
was forced
and
to put
he's
a seat
got to
on,
go
right.
do whatever it is mm-hmm. to get some peace that will save him and his father.
Exactly.
And his father's broken his leg, so he's got to tell him what to do.
Yep.
Yeah. But what I've heard is that it takes itself too seriously.
Big time. Yeah. I would say that that's its biggest flaw, is like, this is really serious story about a guy and his son, people. And I want you to be
really
watching
serious.
This.
Pay attention.
Yeah. So,
no, I Am Legend, where there's at least a dog to lighten things up.
No dog. Yeah.
No, that's too bad. You know, I've been trying to think of what I'm reading, and for some reason, this is atypical. I can't find any fiction that really is calling to me, and I'm reading a lot of nonfiction.
Oh, that's neat. That's not
normal
for you.
Yeah, it's kind of different for me. I'm reading a volume of the history of America from the exploration times to right before World War I. It's called America, The Last Best Hope.
Nice.
Which, I know. And I thought, wow, that's an interesting title, but it comes from a speech that Abraham Lincoln gave. And when I found that, I went, oh, all right. And then I'm reading G.K. Chesterton's biography-ish of St. Thomas Aquinas, because that's for a book club I'm in.
Oh, neat.
And I've never been able to read his nonfiction, but for some reason, I guess because I have to, this really grabbed me, and I've kind of been mesmerized by it until this last chapter, which is just about the philosophy. And Chesterton doesn't ever really lay anything out in an A, B, C fashion. He's very entertaining to read, and you get what he's talking about, but the philosophy part, I'm just going, oh, great. I'm not getting this. And so what I'm having to do, actually, I wanted to do, is I have a book by Lewis de Wohl. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't.
W-O-H-L. He was a writer in the 1950s who I've had recommended to me before, but his books just weren't, it wasn't the right time. He wrote a slew of these biographies of saints. And later on for this same book club, I'm going to have to read The Confessions by St. Augustine. Yes, it's a ton of fun right now in this book club. And but it is making me read these things. And so I thought, well, let me try this guy's book called The Restless Flame on St. Augustine. And actually, it was really good. He was no Samuel Shellabarger, but these books have always been represented to me as YA, young adult biographies. They're not. They were written for grown-ups, and just because they're not all 600 pages and talk about what he probably had for breakfast doesn't mean they don't go into the complexities of the person's life and what they were struggling with. And I was really impressed by that book, so I got the last, what is it called? The Quiet Light about him. And so I'm really looking forward to forging through the end of the Chesterton book so I can read this one, which will put a lot of it into context, because I opened it up and I was like, oh, there are three names of philosophers that I didn't know who they were in Chesterton. They're right here. It's talking about them.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So,
nice, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, you told me about Uvula Audio doing the Confessions of St. Augustine. I just looked it up while you were talking. It says it will start on June 21st.
Oh.
So, yay, that's not too far away, but is it too late for your book club?
Oh, no. No, they're doing it in November.
Oh, perfect.
I'm going to start soon because I think at the beginning of July, I figured if I read 20 or 25 pages a week, I could get done by whenever in November.
Oh, that's good.
And that way I have a chance to...
I picture a big old chart in your kitchen where you've got all these boxes where you say, okay, 25 pages of this, I need to get done this week.
It's kind of like that, except it's in my little diary, or not diary, my little paper and ink calendar, everybody.
Awesome.
That I take back and forth with me. And on the monthly pages, I have a listing on the side where I'll go, okay, this month I have to watch these movies and I have to read these books or start them.
Well, funny.
So I'm done in time for the podcast, the book club, it's funny.
Jenny from Reading Envy told me that there's this stuff called marker board paint, where you can actually paint a wall, and it hardens, it turns into a marker board.
Right.
So I need to paint a whole wall, and I've been obsessed with it ever since I discovered that it exists. I was like, oh, I want to paint a whole wall with this. I cannot wait.
I think I would be depressed if I saw it in front of me all the time. This is a weekly calendar, but it has the month calendar at the beginning, and so I'll write all the stuff on there, all the meetings I'm supposed to go to, all the books or movies or whatever, and when, like, our podcast and all that kind of thing. And then I look at it and I just get so overwhelmed by all this stuff. So if I just look at it week to week, I'm fine. Oh, on Wednesday I'll do this, on Friday I'll do that. But yeah, I have to keep track of it somewhere. And I actually also have a page of scheduled. And then I just have a list of the books and a list of the movies.
Hmm.
It's a proof I'm doing too many of these things, I guess.
Oh,
reviews I have to write.
It's great. That's great.
Well, I seem to like it.
Yep. It's fun.
It confuses everyone else. So.
Well, good. All right. Let's see. So what's coming up next?
Oh,
let's see.
Next.
Ah, yes.
Summer old time.
Yeah,
old school. Old time.
This will be fun.
The Magnificent Seven.
Yes. Starring Yul Brynner.
And Steve McQueen.
All right.
Oh, and Charles Bronson. What's not good either. Oh, I'm feeling better already. I might have to watch it 2 or 3 times.
Well, good. I cannot wait.
And it's a Western, too, yeah. So it's okay.
How
yeah.
fun,
and
how fun.
Then, wow, I'm blanking. Oh, then yeah. My Indian mystery book.
Yes, I'm eager to see that. It arrived, so
the
I have a copy.
The Missing Servant.
Right, The Case of the Missing Servant by Tarquin Hall.
Yes.
And there are copies at Paperback Swap.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I got one, too.
Good, awesome. Good. Cool. Yeah, so I've got that. And then after that, I picked a movie. We're going to talk about Apollo 13,
which I love.
Ah, that's great. Which is not science fiction, but still
science fact.
It's science fact, yeah.
But told with some amazing actors.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Really,
and I need to pick a book to come after that, and I haven't done that yet.
We're far enough ahead. There's time.
Okay.
And then we've kind of been talking about the faith. The quarterly faith stuff, but
right.
It's all going to be much easier this time for anybody who is keeping up. No big book this time.
All right.
Just emotionally wrenching. Which seems to be where they all fall. Big got book of ideas or emotionally wrenching.
Yeah. Okay, it'll just tear your heart rate out. That's all.
I picked a movie that'll be fine.
It's great. Looking forward to it all.
Yes,
oh,
me
great.
Too.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yes, thank you. We'll talk again in a couple of
weeks.
In
a couple of weeks, that's right. Have fun. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, Scott.
Yeah.
Pip.
Pop.
Bim.
Bam.
Ha ha.